Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks with Patricia Brantley, CEO of Friendship Charters, a cohort of 16 charter schools in Washington, D.C. The two talk about how Friendship put itself at the cutting edge of delivering high-quality hybrid education in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, and how what they're learning on the ground every day portends to the future of public education. The two also discuss how education services can be unbundled, and families can utilize a wide array of options and services that best suits their children's needs and deliver greater equity. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
I'm excited to have Patricia Brantley with us today. Patricia is the CEO of the Friendship Charter Schools in Washington, D.C. You guys have about 16 campuses in the D.C. area. You're pre-K 3-year-olds through 12.
Correct.
And so I'm really excited to have you as part of the podcast today, Pat. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Doug. I'm excited to be here. I will do anything under the banner of stepping up for children. So, it's a great time to talk about what's happening in the present and how we envision a new future.
Let's talk about what you've done initially. What did you guys have to do through your campuses with your families and staff in order to adjust to the pandemic?
It's been the most unusual of times. I'm not going to call them bad times because I think we're learning a lot of good things about how we can better educate children and support families. That said, in the spring, we went out for what we thought was going to be a week or two. Then that turned into another month. And then it was, you won't be back until the end of the school year. And like every place else, we scrambled. We were fortunate because we already had a pretty good technology division. We had devices going to many of our students, mostly secondary, that were one-to-one. But we had other devices that we were able to send home. And so we transitioned pretty quickly to, you're going to be online with us using probably a Friendship-issued device in order to get your work done. But we kept in our minds that we were going to come back. And I think because of that, our spring effort was sort of limited by, you know, doing things for these 2-week increments because we thought we were going to come back. What we learned, though, even in the spring was prepare for the absolutes. We're absolutely coming back. We're absolutely not coming back. What we learned was we needed to do more than just say parents were partners. We needed to make sure that parents were informed enough to be able to help us co-deliver the curriculum and the content and to see how students were doing. We could get that information from families. We knew this in the first 2 weeks. We said, wow, we just gave parents a curriculum guide. And the questions from families were just terrific. I can't describe to you what it's like to have parents there, and they want to know what the manipulatives are. They want to know how better to support their students in math. And I knew right away that even if we came back in person, that we were not going to drop this accelerated, intensive support for families. For this is what we're doing. And it's not that we expect families to be teachers, but let's face it, families are the first teachers, right? And they don't want to see their children struggle. They want to know what's happening. And so we found that to be really important. So we did a lot of work to get ready virtually. We hope we were going to come back at least in a hybrid way for this fall, but we still knew that there might be families that would opt out and opt to stay virtual. Friendship serves a 99.9% African American student body. About 70% of our staff are African American, and we knew that our community was being hardest hit with COVID, and so we expected there'd be a lot more fear, and then that turned out to be right. The district didn't open in person. We all opened virtually, but a week after opening virtually, we opened small in-person learning hubs for families of essential workers or students with needs, but really for those families who felt like they needed the structured school environment. We continue to support those kids online with the rest of their online peers, but they've got an instructional person in the classroom with them, helping them to navigate.
But they were taking the same, they were getting the same instruction as the kids online. They just had a, it was sort of childcare and some additional sort of tutoring support systems.
Yes, custodial care, if you will, and tutoring and support, recreation, recess, some things that kids need. You know, I would say meals, but even from the beginning of the pandemic, we were serving meals 5 days a week with extra meals for the weekend because we knew that we had families that really needed to continue to have that support. So that was important.
Now that school has started in the fall, what's going well and what are your additional improvement opportunities?
So I think that what's going well is the sense from kids that there's somebody there who cares about them, that it may be on the other end of a screen, but they still have that teacher and that school community, and there is caring there. I think what's going well is we have seen this rapid growth of some students with special needs, of some students that, you know, maybe people would have said, well, they're a little bit feisty, right, or the discipline. And what we're hearing when we survey those kids is, you know, when I'm in school with other kids, I get distracted. And now I feel like I have fewer distractions from my friends. I am less of a distraction to some of my friends. And I get more personal attention from my teachers.
Wow.
This is a really interesting point. I feel like my feedback from my teachers is better. So that's a portion of the group that we've surveyed has said they feel like they're getting feedback, and so that is going really well. We've heard from families. Think about a parent who wrote to us who has a child who's autistic, and she was very worried about what would happen and if there would be some regression in social skills. And she said, you know, she feels like she always has someone she's connected to, and her student has a very structured, individualized program, and she's getting the help that's needed. Or another person who said, you know, people said kids didn't learn in the spring, but my child entered kindergarten not reading and left kindergarten reading. And so we know that there are kids that it's working for. We know that there are kids that it may be working better in some cases than they're in person. And I think that we've learned that, right? Individualizing our work around students, surveying them, and finding out from students how they're feeling about learning. We'd always done surveys, but this is really intensive understanding from kids where they feel supported and where they don't. The other thing is in staff development. You know, think about professional development. Teachers complain about it all the time, and I'm with them. I understand why they complain. And it's sort of like, you call me to come sit in a room and give me PD, but I have all these other things to do, right? Because teachers, you know, have a lot to do. And so we have to say, look, we hire teachers we never met in person, right? You know, they couldn't necessarily shake the hand of their principal or walk next door to the teacher and say, how is this done at Friendship? And so we've gone into this concept of really 24-hour PD. So all of our PD sessions are taped. Teachers can get to them on their time. And this is what I think is important about this period. The whole world has moved to sort of on-demand groceries. You want something tomorrow morning, you go online, you get it, it's at your door, right? On-demand food, all kinds of things, on-demand taxis, whatever you want. But education isn't. It is in this building. If you register here, you can come here, and you can only come during the set windows of time. And we treated our teacher PD that way too. You work here, here's your building, here's where you go. And if we have district PD, then you must go over here. Well, you know, we don't have to do that anymore. You know, for a person who learns best when they're not thinking about the school day, but it's nighttime and they can just dial into that PD, or I was in the PD and I got it, but I need to go back and refer to it. Like, I don't think that we will ever go back to not making sure that the professional development we do for staff isn't always available to them in their own time. I think that's a pretty important piece. We learned that the way we thought about equity in terms of the content or the availability of master teachers and particular content to students, that we had it tied to a school building, right? So as I said, we have 16 campuses. I had students in one of our Southeast campuses that said they wanted Mandarin as their next language. Tried to hire two teachers, one for that particular high school where the kids asked, one for the other high school. I could only find one. And so only one school got it, Now we're in the middle of the pandemic. Students still want all the courses. Right. And I can just say, oh, okay, I'm just going to dial you into this course. And right. And that's pretty amazing, right? When you think about being able to have advanced placement courses on special topics, graphic design, psychology, whatever it might be, not special topics, but even sometimes mundane topics, and you say you can't find the teachers, well, they're there, right? They just might not be in our location. And we're doing that. College credits. There are so many things that as I think about what we can do now, I know that when kids return back to school, I might need an adult to help facilitate the learning. But if it's a language that a kid wants to take that we don't have a teacher for, I can still bring that to them. And I'm pretty excited about what we can do in terms of ensuring that our kids have equitable access to all kinds of content and also to master teachers, right? So a master teacher at one campus, you know, who may be a master in fourth grade ELA, can now figure out ways to support kids that in many different places.
So I'm hearing a couple of themes. I just want to verify. First, I'm hearing you say that education has moved out of a brick and mortar time box and sort of into the community, into local communities, into families, that it's much more out there than simply in the buildings. And I'm also hearing you say that you're using this expansion of education to create a lot more customization for your teachers, but also for your kids. And I'm wondering, I presume those are themes that you would like to see continue forever.
I would like to see them continue forever. I would like us to first say, what is it that we want to deliver to students? Not what is it that this physical location needs to deliver, right? And to figure out ways to do that that aren't constrained and not shackled by, well, they're on this part of town or they're on that side of town or we can't get to them, because we know that we can. I also want us, though, to think about a child's access to education being as critical as their access to meals, being as critical as their access to food, water, air. And I say that because almost immediately in the district, we said, well, what if families can't get to a school to pick up the meals that they would get for free? And we decided to deliver them, right? And we weren't the only ones. Lots of school districts decided to do that. And so similarly, I feel like we have let lack of access to the internet mean that a child doesn't get school, right? And when I talk about it, I say, look, kids need to have access to the internet. We need to give them, when we go back to normal, we need to guarantee they're going to have a teacher. Yes, they're going to have a building. Yes, they're going to have internet. Yes, they're going to have books. It just needs to become routine. I would say in this time, this is what's proven. It's like you built the best school that anybody could ever have. It's going to right all the wrongs. It's going to put every child onto the future of their choice. And you built it on the 10th floor of a building with no elevator. And you said to the kids in the wheelchair, well, look, the school is here, right? That's what the internet means, right? It means access. Or you put it so far away, only parents with cars can get there. One thing that I know is that moving to one-to-one to every child, you come to school, you get a device, and that device is internet connected. Like, we have to have those things. And if the device isn't internet connected, then the city has broadband that is easily accessible to everyone. And this is important. And I know people think about the cost. I talked to a business group about it. I said, it's not only that we are preparing our students to live in the world later. They will be your workers, but they will also be your consumers. And few people are shopping anymore without some reference to the internet, whether you're price checking, whether you're checking the address, whether you're comparing, you know, features of something you might buy. I'm renovating a house and someone went to show me stoves and refrigerators and they all had the internet in them. I'm like, well, what would I need that for? I mean, like, but just think about like what our kids are growing up with. It's so far advanced. And we need to make sure they have access. But more than that, I believe that today, broadband, internet, it is the way we acquire knowledge in America, right? Yeah. And education is about knowledge. You know, you want to learn about an election, you want to hear about it. People are getting their news and just basic information because they're picking up their phone and they're able to look it up. And that's critical for our children to have access to and to be guaranteed access to it.
So there's another theme that I'm hearing, I may be projecting, but I think it's in there. You and I have talked a little bit about it, which is your business model moving forward, your ability to unbundle services. You know, when you and I were going to school in K-12, it was one-stop shopping, right? I mean, everything was there. But as you talk, there's all kinds of opportunities for families to get some of your services, but not others. And of course, we're seeing in the communities now that in order to keep kids safe, that families are creating learning pods and homeschool cooperatives, and all these things are happening out there. How do you think about your business moving forward? How do you think about your ability to work with families who may not want all your services, but may want a couple courses here or some online instruction there, or maybe would like to be on campus, but not full time taking instruction, but maybe the safety of your campus and maybe accessing online courses from Princeton University, for example, because, you know, of course, for that works for them, but they don't want to be at home. They want to be, there's other things that offer. So how do you think about that moving forward?
So the first thing is, when we were in that conversation and you said, you know, unbundling education, I said, yes, you know, this is the way that the world is going, right? You know, let's assume that all the regulatory reasons were gone, and let's assume that the law supported it. To be able to say to a family, you're registering with us because you want your 4 and 5 year old to be part of our early childhood, but you want arts experiences, you know, from over here, it would be amazing for families. Right. I think that we as a society for too long had said, you know, the expertise in education is over here. And so families, you have to come in and take what we are giving you. But parents know their kids best. Right. They know their interests. They know what they are. They know that they might be in a community that doesn't offer everything in one school. I don't think that we figured out as a society how to make that possible. So I'm going to start with the part that I know that we can do, which is that we have our brick and mortar. Yes, we were already running the district's only free public online schools for kindergarten to 12th grade. And so some of our learning is based on what we were doing and online. We've been running that for a few years. But what I know now is that I can say to families, I understand that you are interested in the arts for your kids. One of our middle schools is an arts focused middle school, but you're on another part of town. So here go the range of courses that your child will be able to dial into. Now, what's probably going to happen, because the custodial function with schools is so connected by law and truancy and people just worried, is that the child will still be in that school and potentially going there, but they can still get the content from someplace else. They can still get the content from someplace else. For our online school, a portion of families really just want a virtual education for their child, but some of them are homeschooling and they want the supports. I mean, they homeschooled for elementary, but now it's middle and maybe it's more complicated, or their kid wants access, or their child is in athletics or in some kind of other clubs. We have a student that was in our online middle school. She's actually one of the reasons we opened up the online high school, who is a top world rank tennis pro.
Wow.
Disqualified for the Open. She's in France right now. She's playing. Wow. And I promise you, actually, that was at 3 o'clock in the morning, our time, but their time, she was playing. But by the time our school opens, she will be sitting there ready to do her work. And she can do that, you know, her family lives here, she's a resident DC, but she's literally playing in France right now. And she's able to do that work. And so unbundling education from place and from entity, right? It's more than just unbundling from the school. Schools are usually connected in a system. And whether that is the traditional public school system or the charter school system, we've said to families, you choose your school in the beginning of the year, and that's your school, right?
Right, yeah.
And so we have to think about all the ways to give parents the fullest choice that they want. And let's be honest, that's scary for systems. Yeah. And that's true whether you're the large system or whether you're a small charter school, right? But it's time that we start to think about what else we can do to truly be innovative and not to have, you know, the longer the charters or other things that were innovative in the beginning stay around, the more that you see a move toward bureaucracy, right? Because, and there are reasons for that. Charters are an important part of our neighborhood fabric here in Washington, D.C., and in other cities as well. So you need to make sure that they can continue, and so rules start to, you know, promulgate that allow that to happen. But that said, it doesn't mean that we can't figure it out. It doesn't mean that we can't say to a family, okay, so you want this kind of support that Friendship provides for your student going off to college, but there's another public policy, charter school or traditional school, and you want your child to be involved in their debate teams. How do we put that in the hands of families? I think that is the challenge for us, that we really need to confront, talk about, and figure it out if we're going to get all kids to where the kids want to go.
Wow. Well, you've been very generous with your time. I know you run a 16 campus charter school operation. Everything's going on. Are there any other things that you think might be good to share that, you know, I really want people to think about what the opportunity, obviously it's a horrific pandemic, but what are the opportunities that would allow us to, you know, transform public education in a way that increases quality and equity?
I think that the biggest opportunity is that adults need to think differently and they need to catch up with kids, right? Right. We need to catch up with kids. And by think differently, you know, we, as I mentioned, we were already running the only K-12 online. And we said, listen, we're going to have 3- and 4-year-olds. That are going to be sitting on the screen, and we need to do some investments and open up online for 3- and 4-year-olds. Now we know their parents are going to be a large part of that. And there was so much pushback, like this isn't developmentally appropriate. It may not be, but across America, millions of kids in that age group are being connected by a screen. So how are we going to learn from it, right? So that's part of what we need to rethink our own thinking about what is necessary. We need to figure out how we help our parents take more control of education. And that might mean a change in the way resources are deployed. But if this pandemic goes on for much longer, the reality is that families will best be able to coordinate their own learning pods, right? But it's out of reach for many families that don't have any means. That's one of the reasons while we call them learning hubs, they're pods. Like, and we explain to people that come in, you're responsible for this small group. This is the group that you're with. Please think about all the things you do outside of school and here. Right. But it's because we could provide a place and a teacher that some of our families would not have had access to. And as you go around Washington, D.C., and if you know it, it's very split in terms of income and race. And so you have families that have full-time teachers, you know, with 3 or 4 kids, and they're getting an amazing education. Yeah. But that education is owed to every single one of our children, regardless of their parents' resources. And so we just have to figure out technically how we're going to get it delivered to them.